Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome back to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss, well, I can't say each week anymore, but often, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual or transgender man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, please send them to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest tonight, I'd just like to mention a few words. I've been away from the show for the last 2 months, and this is my welcome back show. I will sporadically be having shows throughout October, November, and December through the holiday season, help give support to women who are going through this time. So if you'd like to be on my show, please drop me a note at bonkay@aol.com, and you can come on here anonymously to discuss whatever issues you would like. Also, next weekend, I'm so excited. It's our healing weekend. We haven't had one for a couple of years because of COVID. So we have women coming from all over the country to come to this one here in Philadelphia, and I'll be seeing some of my old friends and some new friends. I'm just really excited about getting together with the most dynamic women you can ever imagine. And even though it's late, there's still time to join us if you would like to. Just let me know. Tonight, I would like to introduce a friend of mine who's really very special to me. I'm so excited that she would come on, Alexa Servididio. Alexa, thank you so much for coming back to our show.
Yes, and thank you so much for having me back on again.
You know, what's so special about Alexa is that not only is she a therapist, but she's a licensed clinical social worker, a psychotherapist, but she also is an actress, an author, a sports person. I mean, there's so many titles that you have, and of course, the most important one, a mother. to a beautiful child. And I really admire the fact that you can go do so many things at one time. But you do, right?
Yes, yes. And I find it's really important to be able to follow your different passions and follow your heart. I know it's definitely not easy. It's easier said than done at times, but I think it really helps to be in a happier place and be at peace with yourself when you're following your dreams.
Alexa, tell me a little bit before we get started about your show. How do people get to see it?
Yes, well, the Alexa Show now is on my YouTube channel, Ask Alexa Therapy. So you can look at all the shows that I've had on recently, the last couple of weeks, months, and the past year. I'm starting a lot of new segments now where I'm answering questions from the viewers, which is really, really great. So people are sending in their questions to me at info@askalexatherapy.com, and I can answer them right on air. So they can just look on YouTube, and I do Facebook Lives every Sunday and Instagram Lives every Sunday around 6 p.m., answering questions from viewers, from listeners, a lot of different questions I get in my private practice. And, of course, people can remain anonymous. As you know, this is a really tough field, and sometimes it just takes enough courage to ask the question. So definitely everything is confidential.
That's wonderful. Your first book, Finding Your Peace Within Chaos, which is a wonderful book that really talks to people about how to survive during, during the whole, any kind of pandemic, really, it was a time when people really needed to find the peace within chaos, correct?
Yes.
Because this is such a hard time for people. And just understanding, survival techniques and how to survive any kind of chaotic times. I think that this world today has become more chaotic than ever. Wouldn't you think so?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I'm seeing it more and more. And I think a lot of times people's resources and ways that they can, release to get some comfort and peace have been almost stripped away, because of the pandemic, because of different things that people are feeling, out there without a safety net.
That pandemic, I think, is part of it. But I just think society as a whole has changed so much. And I'm not sure, how this all started, but for instance, with all the shootings in the street, with drugs, with people being so vulnerable, you can be anywhere. Here in Philadelphia a few weeks ago, a shooter came into a hospital and started shooting. And if you can't feel safe in a hospital, it's really bad. But you take a look at how many shootings there are in big cities every week, how many people who are innocent get killed. And I think that people are feeling like very helpless and depressed over this. Do you find that to be so?
Yes, yes. And I do find that, violence and people acting out has definitely been on the rise. And I think mental health has become so, so important right now. And, other than having therapists and different outlets with talk shows as of yourself, people are feeling like they don't have anything else. And I think when, they're desperate, they're having shootings and robberies, everything financially, emotionally, physically, just in different types of chaos and trauma. And it's definitely being acted out as we see all over at this time.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I think that today, in our society today, aside from the COVID, there's so many other issues that are just pulling at it. People in this country, that people feel a sense of hopelessness. And I think that's where your therapy comes in, because you're able to clear that out a lot and try to put things in perspective for people to give them hope. And I just wanted to mention that at the beginning of the show as well as at the end, that you do therapy. Do you do therapy online?
Yes, I'm doing all virtual now. Doing all virtual.
I mean, do you do it for out of state if people want to come to you for therapy?
Yes, I have been. Now insurance is finally covering it. And because one positive that came out of the pandemic is they're really sticking, the insurance companies, with reimbursing so far for telehealth out of state. They realize people have had to move back to different states and different places, but therapy is so important. So, yes, it's been very busy, definitely.
Great. So I'll give you contact information at the end of the show. Alexa, you've been on our show a number of times through the last few years, and every time is very enlightening. But tonight I asked you specifically to come on for a specific purpose. It's been a very common thread through my group over the last 6 months, and even before that, but even more so now because maybe we have more new members that are coming on who have the same similar problems, alienation of their children after the divorce. And I just wanted to speak about that for a moment because a lot of times mothers who can be the best mothers in the world who are not necessarily married to the best fathers in the world, and when the marriage breaks up, they have to struggle with so many issues, and their children, instead of supporting them, sit there and blame them. And sometimes the father has not been very nice to the mother or the children, and yet the children are now fighting for their father's attention, their love, and kind of blaming things on their mother. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Yes, I see that a lot in my private practice, and I've seen it through the years increase so much. And I find a lot of times that the children, if they're still young or if they're growing into adulthood, they look at the father as the one that needs to be saved, as the one that needs to be protected, that is sick and does not really understand or grasp or doesn't want to accept something's really wrong with dad. So they actually take on the parental role of protecting dad, which means they attack mom, who is the stable one, who is the one that's, you know, most of the time been consistent, has always been there. So what I've seen a lot with my practice is that they will turn on mom because they know they can to some degree. Because if they turn on dad, dad is so erratic with his behaviors and sometimes verbally and physically and financially abusive that they know if they do one wrong step, dad will disappear or dad will severely act out. So they know mom is the safer one, which I know doesn't make sense, but, you know, when someone's in an abusive situation like this, it doesn't make sense. They act on emotions and out of trauma.
Because it's very hurtful to the women who are going through this at the time to see the children that they try so hard for turning on them. And, in fact, somebody from my group today mentioned about her two sons. She said, you know, it's not so much that they're against the father, but they'll say to her, we don't want to be involved with your drama. You know, they resent it. And it's not like it's her drama. I mean, the whole family structure was broken down through no fault of her own. And yet she feels a sense of responsibility because they keep throwing that at her. And I think a lot of times children resent, I mean, you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I've found that children resent parents sometimes who, when a marriage breaks up, because they're blaming their mothers for the marriage breaking up, namely because the father's saying to them, I didn't want to break up the marriage, it was your mother. Even though the truth of the matter is, you know, the father was out there cheating or has a boyfriend. You know, the mother finds out he's gay, and, you know, she doesn't want to have to live with that in her marriage, but he'll blame the wife anyway. He can't understand why she has to break up the marriage. Have you dealt with that kind of situation?
Yes. I find this is where the confusion of unconditional love comes up, because a lot of people believe that if I cheat or if I lied to you and I have a boyfriend and I'm not – you know, heterosexual, this is unconditional love. You have to put up with what is going on if you love me. And I find that also, you know, goes to the children. Even if they're adult children, they feel that this is unconditional love. How could you break up the family? And also don't want to keep being reminded that there's pain and that the mom is of course still suffering. That's a wound that takes a while to heal. And I think it's time to really process, and a lot of times they don't want to hear it anymore, but it doesn't just go away. It's, you know, just a regular divorce without these other, you know, layers onto it is very painful, and people would understand that even more. But then when you put in other layers, sometimes people say, well, it's just that's it, you know, just get over it, move forward. If it was that easy, people would do it. And I don't think people don't understand unconditional love doesn't mean with putting up with things that are absolutely wrong.
Mm-hmm. And I think also, help me, what do you think of this? First of all, children are both parents. You know, they're their mother and their father. And sometimes the children are like their father. I mean, it's just genetically predisposed. And not necessarily, you know, good or for bad, but that's just the reality of what it is. And for those kids who are like their fathers, and they've already seen patterns of abuse by their fathers to the mothers, I think they think that's their normal. And they treat the mother the same way that the father treated her. I've seen that in a number of relationships also, where the father was verbally abusive to the mother, and the children are, because they think that's the way it should be. You know, it's learned mm-hmm. behavior on their part. Do you see that too?
Absolutely. It becomes the norm. Their tolerance or to see it as abusive is not there, because they see it so much that it's normalized to speak to mm-hmm. mom like that, to treat her like that. And just as I say, when two children grow up in the same household and have been sexually abused, one can turn out to be not a predator, while the other one could turn out to be someone who becomes a sexual predator. Each child is different, even if they go through a similar experience. I find it's really based on if they've had an outside mentor or someone in the outside world that really gave them attention or taught them right or wrong or how good they are and gave them hope, or they start to identify with the abuser.
When I spoke to you earlier before the show, I read you this quote from a meme that one of my women posted that I just think is so on the target. It says, "The way he treats you affects the mother they get. He is abusing your children when he abuses you. He is robbing them of their right to have a happy, healthy mommy." Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know sometimes people say, oh, the children should know, be strong. The children know. And when mom is mm-hmm. being abused, children know. And there's only so much a mom, can hide and not have someone realize that they're being abused. They're human, and children sense it. And, yes, they're robbing the child of having a mom that can be emotionally present but emotionally safe.
That's a really good point that I think women have to understand. I am so in favor of bad marriages ending, because I think that the damage that's done, the longer you stay in a marriage, the more damage is done to your children. And I've had so many women tell me over the years, so many of them tell me, you know, my children don't know that I'm unhappy. They don't see me when I'm unhappy. And I think that's not true. You cannot hide unhappiness every day of your life. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I could give you an example that happened just 2 weeks ago. I had a young woman working in my house doing some work, and obviously she was on her phone for a bit, and she was visibly upset. Obviously something was going on, whoever she was on the phone with. And my daughter, who was only 23 months, I guess, saw her and followed her into the other room and said, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And that's a 23-month-old who doesn't have that much language skills, but realized, saw the pain in her face and the tone that she had on the phone and said, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" to a woman she's seen maybe twice. So they sense it. The children sense when there's something going on in the household.
The other thing is that I always tell women also is that children know what a good marriage looks like, and they know it not from their home but from television. And when they see, you know, happy shows about happy families, even if they're not perfect, but they're happy and there's love in the household, they can certainly differentiate that from what's going on in their house. Would you agree with that, too?
Yes, yes, because they see the different examples, and they see how mommy and daddy and how daddy talks to mommy, or how they don't have the same look on their face or the same feeling. Because there's a lot of times that underlying feeling of tension, of fear, of when's the other shoe going to drop.
Yes. I really feel that when you're living in an abusive situation, that it just changes who you are. And I know for myself that when my children were babies and I was living with their horrible father, and, you know, I felt like I had three children that I had to take care of, because it was never just the two of them. There was always something wrong with him to compete with them. But it was like to take tension away from them. But I always felt, you know, I had to act a certain way, behave a certain way, because otherwise he'd start yelling and screaming, which really unnerved them. It gave my daughter's nervous system. She was always shaking when he starts screaming. So, you know, you have to change how your behavior is. I mean, I think it really affects your whole mental state when you live with someone who's abusive. And even if it's not physically abusive, so often, you know, emotional abuse I feel is worse sometimes than physical abuse. It may not be as painful at the second that it's happening, but I think the scars last longer. And I just feel that it affects you every single day. Every day when you have to wake up and feel you're walking on eggshells because somebody's going to be angry if you don't agree with him or do what he wants to do, to me is very abusive. But women are willing to live like this, you know, and that's the whole problem. They're afraid to make a move. And I could understand it. I mean, having been in an abusive situation with a husband who kept threatening, if you leave me, I'm going to take the children and you'll never see them again. What do you do in a situation like that? What do you tell women?
Well, you know, I always, you know, speak about safety first and making sure they're safe and that their child is safe. And a lot of times when there's financial concerns that, yes, the husband does have more financial control, but I find at least nowadays the courts have been getting a little bit better with hearing more about what's going on and being having the children being interviewed, having a forensic evaluation through the court where a psychiatrist, a psychologist, whoever they have, a forensic expert, will meet with each child, will meet with each family member, and then them interacting on their own together and to really kind of give a report so you do have a better chance. And also, you know, sometimes, yes, the father can take the child and move to another country and things like that are possible. But I'm finding with the courts it is a little bit better with that. And that I know it's really hard, and it's hard even though that, yes, it's abusive, it's hard to make that step. But I think it's really saying, can you live like this for the rest of your life? Unfortunately, I have not seen it get better. I mean, yes, miracles happen, but unfortunately, I have not seen abusers, physical abusers, severe emotional abusers get better. Really, I mean,
because
some emotional abusers, yes. Yes, if they get help and they really
they don't
throw
feel they have a problem.
Therapy.
They're not going to go to therapy because they don't believe there's anything wrong with them, or they'll go for a couple of times and then blame the therapist. There's something wrong with her or him. I see that all the time. They go with their wives to therapy. They quit after two times, saying that therapist doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm not going back there because the therapist might know what he's talking about. Or if he doesn't want to hear anything, criticism from his wife, he certainly doesn't want to hear it from the therapist. Do you have that happen to you?
Yes, and the therapist is a threat, obviously. So they want to. So a lot of times these people think they can win over the therapist, and they're going to schmooze, and the therapist is, you know, going to believe them. And they're most of the time very, you know, wrong, and very upset about being wrong. So they will not go to an outsider to get help. But it becomes very frightening. But I think if someone does not want to admit that there's a problem, then there's really no work to be done.
And that's the whole point. There is no point in going for therapy. Unless two people really have a commitment to making changes, right?
Yes, or at least to say, I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what needs to work. I don't even know if this can work, but let's try and do something. As I tell couples that come in, you don't have to say this is definitely want to be in this marriage or you know what to do, but as long as you say, hey, I'm here, I'm not sure if it's going to work, but let's try it, that's a start.
Do you find that in a lot of cases it does work or no?
The ones that stick in, well, it depends, you know, what's been going on in the marriage. You know, when there's a lot of infidelity, I find a lot of times that the husband or the wife, whoever's been the one with infidelity, really has to do a lot of individual work and figure out why. And I know so many times, as you've said on your show so many times, that the women are blamed that you don't look good enough, you don't cook good enough, you don't dress well, that's the reason why I cheat. And that's, people don't cheat for those reasons. They cheat because there's something wrong with them. But they're able to project it and blame somebody else. So that individual who is doing the infidelity really has to do the work, which is not easy to really figure it out. So in some cases I have seen it work, but it's something that has to be individual and couple and family therapy that really has to
mm-hmm.
be done for a good year or two to really figure out what's been going on.
Alexa, I think a number of our women are married to men who have personality disorders, and either ranging from narcissism or sociopathy or, you know, just really bad behavioral problems. And somebody else put it really, I put a quote on our page, and I think this is so true. The most dangerous liars are those who think they are telling the truth. And some of these men really believe their lies, and they just make them up so easily. I mean, you can tell them that it's a rainy day and the rain's falling on their head, and they're going to say, you're lying, it's the sun is out. And they're going to believe the sun is out even when it's raining. And I think it's so hard when you have to keep coming up against men who are liars. And I just, you know, do you know any kind of strategies? Would you call them on the lies? Would you? How do you react?
What happens with personality disorders, especially with narcissistic, is they're actually missing a part of them. There's a void of, you know, people who do not have narcissistic personality disorder, we feel remorse. We can realize, wow, I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry. Did that, you know, what can we do? Someone who has narcissistic personality, they were never born with that. So it's like speaking another language to them. They don't know what they're talking about because they've never experienced it. The only way that they can get some help is what I've found is that they'll be, if it doesn't work for them anymore, they will actually, because if they keep getting this, doing this behavior and they get what they want all the time, they manipulate, there's no incentive for them to work on themselves. But if everybody's kind of figuring out what they've been up to, they said, wow, I've got to do something, or I'm not going to, you know, have my bills paid, or I'm not going to be able to get away with my secret life. Then they'll learn how to mimic people who have empathy, people who have this. But it's very hard to get into a negotiation with someone who really does not have the capacity of knowing what right and wrong is. So it's almost you're fighting a losing battle, and you're just going to end up getting hurt because they don't have the capacity to even understand. They were never born with it. They're void of it.
Well, on that subject, let me ask you this. Someone has this personality disorder. I always tell women, our women specifically, that they're really prone to meet these kind of guys. Even after their marriages to a gay husband, there are many guys out there who are, you know, have personality disorders who are straight. You know, the results are going to be the same, just a little bit different. But the bottom line is this. I feel that they are attracted to a certain prototype of woman, that someone who's caring, loving, giving, kind, someone they see that's in stress, someone who's had a bad relationship. They kind of hone in on that. They kind of recognize your weaknesses. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. These guys are good. This is their job. The ones that do this and this is how they operate, this is how they survive, they know exactly what they're doing. So they will fish. They will, you know, they will sit in the room and they will observe. And they can see just by mannerisms or by one or two comments they might say to you, and they'll know which woman, oh, okay, her response, that's usually typical of a woman who maybe doesn't have high self-esteem or, you know, hasn't been complimented a lot or this and that. And they're very intuitive. They have that. They don't have their own remorse and right to feel empathy, but they can read people that way where they know how to manipulate them to get them exactly where they want to be. And that's how, you know, they do the love bombing. They'll give someone, and then they abandon and pull away, which is for anyone the most disturbing thing to happen.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that they're conscious that they're doing this? Is this a conscious move on their part?
I find a lot of them are. A lot of them are conscious because unless, you know, they're young and they haven't really been called out on it. But a lot of times they've different areas of their life, and it's not their first relationship that they've been accused of these behaviors or these feelings or these type of actions. So this is usually how they operate and how what and they might they don't I, a lot of times they don't think it's wrong. So they don't understand why they would have to change it. It's just something's wrong with you that you can't put up with it because you're so weak.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep making up their own excuses from whatever background that they've come from that fueled them to be who they are.
So in other words, I'm going to say, well, that's how my culture is. I come from, let's say, I'm just giving an example, an Italian culture or a Latino culture where the men are behaving like this. And that's how, you know, I was raised, and that's how I'm going to be with you. Is that part of it?
Yes. And they'll just make kind of any excuse that will have the woman look at themselves like something's wrong with them. Because it's all about deflecting. So you might call them and say, hey, you know, you were flirting with that person. Like you put me down and you were really, you know, doing something that was inappropriate with that person. And then they will deflect. Well, you're crazy. You're always paranoid. Something's wrong with you. You're paranoid. You didn't even see that happen. And the more and more that happens to someone, no matter how strong they are and how smart they are, it's, you know, they start to wear you down. That's part of the whole grooming process. They groom you.
Mm-hmm.
They isolate you. So you start doubting yourself, and you believe what they say to some degree. And then after a while, you're just so emotionally and maybe physically and verbally beaten down, you just don't fight. You give in just not to have another disaster.
And I think that's what it is. It's something that is a deterioration process. You know, they start off, as you mentioned, with the love bombing, and everything is beautiful and wonderful. And then if something bad happens, you in your head resort back to that love bombing and think that's what it's going to be again. I have a lot of women who tell me this, that they don't want to give it up, you know, because they know that their husbands were loving and caring. They don't know where things went wrong, but they're hoping that it can go back to the way it was. But it doesn't, right?
Unfortunately, I really don't see it going back, mm-hmm. especially when it becomes so abusive. I think it again crosses that line of unconditional love, that you shouldn't have to live that way. You really shouldn't have to be spoken to and treated that way. And I know it's hard to kind of grasp that, and when you really love someone and he's your husband and the father of your children. But I think it's really saying there's really no excuse for that.
So if you see women who are in bad marriages, do you encourage them to get out, stay, try to work it out? I mean, what's your philosophy personally?
Well, I never tell anybody what to do, even if they ask, you know, what would I do? My whole thing
mm-hmm.
is it's my client's journey. So I would say, you know, let's have a couple of options. What's the best scenario? What's the worst scenario? What are your deal breakers? Like, what are you willing to say, okay, that's something I could work with. No, that's something I'm not. And I really help them build on their sense of self and build on their
mm-hmm.
confidence and almost teach them, you have a right to have a deal breaker, even if it's something small, and you stick by that. And I'll remind them of the deal breaker. I'll say, okay, so this is a deal breaker. I'm going to write it down. So if, you know, he's going out every night and not coming home and he's not sleeping at home four nights in a row, that's going to be a deal breaker. So what would we do if he didn't come home for four nights? What would be the next
mm-hmm.
step? Okay, do you want me to remind you of that if this would happen again? You know, this is what I'm going to do. So it really empowers the woman. So she has a plan. Because, you know, when these things happen, they're emotionally upset. Anyone would be, and you don't know what's going on, and you're kind of, you know, hemming and hawing, what should I do? And then I say, okay, well, I remember back in session, this is what we went over. This is a deal breaker. So, you know, this was our plan. What do you think? What do you feel like you want to do? And I think it's really helping them build up, because unfortunately, I found when women leave when they're not ready, they go back. So it's really, I tell them, you got to get to the point where you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. Only you'll know when enough is enough for you. But be careful, because enough and enough for you, it might be in the grave. So you have to be careful. I mean, I'll be honest with you that you're up with some serious stakes here of what's going on. So, you know, these are our choices, and these are all the options that we outweigh. And I explore with the women or the men, you know, which way, you know, what are our plans or outlines that we have.
So going back to where we started a while ago, what are some of the strategies you suggest as a therapist that women can do with their children when they see they're being alienated from them?
If they can, if there's, you know, one child or two children or however many children, if they can find some alone time with that child, even if the child is, you know, unbearable to be around or has totally, completely turned on them, start doing small increments of time together away from the home, away from the father, so they can start rebuilding, even if it's going out to get something to eat or something, just to kind of rebuild that bond, because just like you, your child is still in the throes of it, so they're seeing out of that lens. So what we find, when I find when we take them out of that situation and start introducing other calm situations, their state of mind is be able to say, wait a second, that's kind of bad what I've been putting. You know, mom really isn't that bad. She was really nice. We had actually laughed the other day at lunch. And we start building those foundations with the children to rebuild.
And what happens when they don't want to rebuild at all?
Sometimes we just have to take a step back. I mean, obviously you can't force your children. Depending how old they are, you can obviously still have visitation or custody and things like that. But I think, you know, it's working on in therapy. But making sure it's safe. If your child is being extremely abusive to you, you know, then you have to make sure you're in a safe situation if you're going to speak to your child, because you don't deserve to be the verbal punching bag all the time. So if your child would go to therapy with you or a school counselor or something, that's fine. And I would say, you know, give it some time, unfortunately. They've gone through the same thing you've gone through in a different way, but we don't know how which way they're going to turn.
Yeah, I just think it's so difficult when they have the father manipulating them and turning them against the mother all the time. I'll be honest with you, I had a father like that. He wasn't gay, but he was certainly one who was a sociopath. And from the, I was discussing this with my aunt today. From the time I was a little girl, he was always saying to me, you know, your mother doesn't love you. I'm the one who loves you. I mean, he was had a lot of mental health issues, obviously. But, you know, so my whole life I grew up, you know, feeling alienated from my mother that she didn't love me because my father was telling me that.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, you know, you just don't have a, when you're a child, you're just listening to a parent thinking that they're right because that's your parent.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing was I really wanted my dad to love me, you know, so I needed his approval. Because, you know, he was very sure not to give me his approval unless, you know, he wanted to give it to me. So, you know, you're always working hard for that. So I think that happens with children, too. You know, they're always looking for these guys who are rejecting them to start with for their approval. And so they'll try a lot harder with their fathers than they will with their mothers. But it's still very hurtful. I mean, I understand what our women go through.
And then the children realize they get the approval the meaner they are to mom. So it really becomes you know, a two-edged sword there, because dad gives them good approval and treats them well and shows them love when they do horrible things to mom.
I know. There's so many complications that go into marriages and relationships. And you know, I just feel very bad for people who have to go through this, because I know that I went through it with my ex-husband. He was always trying to turn my children against me, but they lived with me, so they weren't going to turn against me, and they knew me, and they knew him. But a lot of times these guys are really tricky, you know, and they love bomb their children, and they buy them presents, and they become the Disney dad, so they're always, you know, have the convenience of being the good guy.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to turn them. And that's what's so sad to me, you know, that women have to go through any of this. It's bad enough you're going through the end of a marriage that ended because of circumstances beyond your control. Do you deal a lot with people with sexual issues in your practice?
Yes, yes. I do a lot with, you know, sexual abuse, sexual addiction, sexual dysfunction, all the whole variety of it all, yes. You know, adolescents, some children, but mostly adults.
Do you have any success with sexual addiction?
Yes, I have been doing EMDR, the eye movement desensitization reprocessing, with sexual addiction to help work on the urges, the impulses, how the frequency and all that. So I've definitely seen a decrease in that. I've also worked with a few young adolescents that have sexually acted out on other children and worked on them, helping them not act out again, which I've definitely had some success in. So I've been doing a few cases like that. So I've noticed that the EMDR has really been a game changer with sexual addiction, but also sexual abuse victims. It's really been such an incredible success rate.
And with sexual addiction, in my experience, but also, you know, with other people who work specifically in the field, they haven't seen much success. So it's good to hear that sometimes there can be a success story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think with any addiction, it doesn't matter whether it's sexual addiction, drug addiction, you know, alcoholism, any kind of addiction, you have to want to beat it, right?
Yes, yes. And I think it's also figuring out really, you know, with the EMDR, it really gets down to what the negative cognition, what are the different urges that come up. And the machine, the bilateral eye movements of the machine, really helps reprocess and then unlock all those stuck thoughts and stuck feelings, which helps to bring more clarity and reprocess of, when I feel this way, I don't have to do that anymore. I can do this.
Mm-hmm. You think it's hard for women to get past infidelity?
I believe so. I believe it's hard. I believe they can get past infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe, though, it does leave a scar, because I find especially ones that have been totally blindsided, it's a hard idea and situation to grasp. And I think sometimes, you know, people have to really take a deep breath and have a lot of empathy, which is very hard to do when someone is cheating, if they've been a sexual abuse victim or other type of things going on. But it's obviously no excuse for infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe it's very hard. It can be done, but I think there's individual therapy and then couple therapy to really work
I've seen it done a couple of times. I know that for me, my ego is not that strong. I wouldn't be able to survive it. But there are other people, you know, they're able to get past it. I just don't think they're in the majority. I think that's something really hard to live with. And always wondering every time somebody walks out the door, you know, what's going to be going on. That would be me.
Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot.
Spying on them.
Yes. Well, there's a violation of trust.
Yeah, that's a big violation, I think. You know, and also the other thing I wanted to mention that I tell my women, a lot of times it's more difficult to leave a good marriage than a bad marriage. And meaning that some of our women thought they had a very wonderful marriage. They thought they were married to their best friend, not realizing their best friend, the reason why he wasn't having sex with her was because he was having sex with men. And then when they find out, you know, of course, how devastated they are. And, you know, often the husbands want to leave by that point. And I always say that if you had a good marriage, it's harder to get past it because you thought everything was fine, as opposed to a bad marriage where you're kind of happy when it ends so you don't have all those pressures. Do you feel the same way?
Well, I think when there's a bad marriage, at least sometimes people see it coming. They almost can start to sort of prepare and say, wow, I wish this would end, or I can imagine life without this person. Or like all of a sudden your heart is sometimes, you know, you're working up to something. But when you're blindsided and you don't really believe anything was going on, I think that's, you know, there's so many different layers. The layers of who is this person? I don't even know who this person is. And then everything that you thought was your life and was real gets turned upside down. And then the person usually really starts questioning everything.
Mm-hmm. I know. There's no easy fixes to any of these problems for sure. But if you don't mind, can we just talk a little bit about your upcoming book?
Yes, yes. I'm really excited. This is called Your Walk in Life. It's going to be a workbook type of book, and it's about everybody's walk in life, their journey, and a lot of the topics we've discussed are different areas, tough topics that I'll be working with the readers. I'm going to be doing in-person and Zoom workshops. So it just goes over very different ways of how I do therapy, but also how to build up the reader, build up the client on to find out who they are through the tough times they've gone through the good times, being able to embrace them and then build foundations to move forward, to heal, and to grow through everything that life has thrown at them.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the topics you have in the book?
Well, I definitely speak about sense of self and also creating mm-hmm. a nesting place. And a lot of times when clients have come into my office, they don't know what that safe place was because they grew up in a childhood or a home where they didn't have a safe place. They weren't like they could, you know, experiment or play games and everything was kind of fine. They either had a parent that was addicted, was abusive, or absent. So they never had that freedom. So I speak about the importance of the nesting place. What I do for my clients is almost create this place for them in my office where we can explore all these different topics and explore who they are and their sense of self without them feeling like they're being judged, that they're bad, that they shouldn't be doing this, because that's what they grew up with. It's a long process, but I've had a few clients, you know, especially one that encouraged, really inspired me to write about the nesting place in my second book, was they didn't even know what one was. They didn't even think they deserved access to it or to be human. So we spent the first 2 years of our therapy really, you know, working with her finally to believe that she deserved to be human. She deserved to be happy. She deserved people to acknowledge her and be nice to her.
Mm-hmm. Do you think often it's because of childhood experiences that people go through these traumas?
Yes. I've definitely seen a lot of the cases that I work with is trauma as a child, either, you know, within the household or it was something that happened at school or bullying or with someone outside, that there was some sort of trauma.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, we're living in a different kind of world today, but I'm sure these problems existed before, but they just weren't so prevalent, or maybe they just weren't so known. I don't know. What do you think?
I just think, one, they're all just happening at the same time. I also blame the media. I mean, I feel like, you know, the media has a job to, yes, you report what's going on, but you can't fall apart as a media. You can't, you know, make people feel so frightened. You have to help them. We'll figure this out. This is what's going on, but you have to give people hope. And I think when you take people's hope and you just instill fear, 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 you have a responsibility and a liability not to do that. You have to, if you're going to be a media or a therapist or a talk show host, you have to be able to provide hope and strength, be honest, but you have to be able to support people and carry them so you can be the light that they look at through the tough times.
Mm-hmm. So, Alexa, what is your website address?
Yes, it's askalexatherapy.com.
Okay, so they can contact you through that?
Yes, yes.
Would that be the best way?
Yes, all the information's there. There's a button there, submit your questions or contact me. So it's right there. And the email is info@askalexatherapy.com.
That's great. Well, Alexa, I really appreciate you coming on here so much because women need to hear what you have to say. And these are all hard situations and no easy solutions. You know, I wish we could have a magic wand to wave over people and life would be better automatically, but it doesn't work that way.
Yes.
And a lot of times these marriages, you know, are so damaging and people get so damaged in these marriages. And it takes time to rebuild yourself after a marriage like this. I always tell women the worst thing you can do after your marriage is to start dating right away. I think that's really a very self-defeating situation I have found over the years.
Well, I find you have to heal. You have to heal before you jump into something else.
Exactly, because you're going to repeat the same mistakes. You know, you don't know where you went wrong the first time. And I tell women where they went wrong, it's not their fault they have a gay husband, but where they went wrong is maybe staying too long, not recognizing the abuse when it was there, you know, recognizing all those symptoms and signs so you don't keep repeating this, you know, make it your learned behavior. Because these women many times have bad experiences because they rush out too fast, looking for love because they've been so deprived for years and because they've been so put down for years. And I get it. I really do. But I also know it's usually a recipe for disaster, you know, when they meet people too soon and they haven't, you know, managed to clean up their own self and to see what can I learn from this experience so I don't repeat it again. And that's where therapy really helps and comes in, that they really need to speak to someone to see how their life has changed, how they can put it back together again. I tell women you have to re-find yourself or just find yourself. I know a number of our women came out of abusive childhoods and they walked into abusive marriages. So they really never had a chance to know who they are. You know, they were going from one bad situation into another bad situation with no time in between. And it was easy to fall into that because they didn't know any differently. But now they have to learn differently so they don't fall into it again. Would you say that's true?
Yes, yes. And, you know, you brought up a good point when you said leaving a childhood abusive relationship, you know, growing up in that and then going into an abusive marriage. They never
mm-hmm.
have been on their own, which I can understand. It's very scary, but know
mm-hmm.
that you can do it. I know people say, I've never lived on my own. I can never be alone. You can do it. Of course, at first it's going to be strange because you've never done it, but believe me, you can do it. Try it. You will have such an empowerment and a respect for yourself, and just you'll be like, wow, I am one strong person. And it's so empowering. You owe it to yourself to be able to kind of just be with yourself and to heal and love yourself
mm-hmm.
and learn how to love yourself.
I think that's a big problem that our women have. They just don't love themselves enough because they came from relationships when they were growing up where they weren't loved enough. They went into a marriage where they weren't loved again. And so it just strips away your self-esteem, your sense of self, you know, of course, with our women, or sexual esteem. You know, I understand all that, but if you don't rebuild it, you're destined to repeat the same mistakes over and over again. And I see it. I see women walking right into the same relationship but with a straight man, but with the same abusive nature. And yet we do have women who have happily ever after, I like to call it, because they took the time they needed. They didn't jump into a relationship. They tried to get fixed first, fix their mental health, and found healthy relationships, which is wonderful.
Yes.
So, you know, there's hope for everybody. You just have to do the work that goes with it, right?
Yes, yes. And the work, you learn to embrace it and love it. I know it doesn't sound like you will, but it's hard, but you definitely will. That's going to be your foundation and your strength.
Mm-hmm. And that's where therapy comes in.
Yes.
So Alexa is available. You know, she's available by Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she has a wonderful practice. So if you're looking for therapy, she's a person to go to, because you will really make a difference in your life. So, Alexa, I want to thank you so much for spending the time with us.
Of course, and thank you so much for having me on. I always love being on your show.
Thank you. I'll be asking you to come back again in the springtime, so don't worry.
Absolutely.
I know how to find you.
Yes.
AskAlexaTherapy.com. But no, I'm only kidding. But, yeah, I really appreciate it. I will be asking you again, though.
Cool.
You always give
such
great insight to our women. All right, so everyone have a wonderful week. I'll be back here in 2 weeks. And love to all of you. Love to you, Alexa. You're the best, really.
Thank you. Love to you, too. Thank you.
All right, sweetie. Take care. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.